keep it alive. Through these lines I write, I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling in flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. I'm really happy to be back with you. Had a decent weekend. Took yesterday off and, just regrouping with all this stuff going on. It's, working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week at this stuff, it can get a little overwhelming at times, so definitely took some time off yesterday, but man, I went online this morning and there's just so much stuff going on, and we're going to start jumping into it. We've got some very in-depth coverage from the anti-media about the elections. And people are just getting really sick of what's going on here. The more they find out, the more it's just becoming more and more apparent that things are, maybe not the way they seemed for many people. I think some people already knew what was going on, but I don't think the majority does, or, a lot of people just didn't realize it for a long time or didn't care until now. So it's really important to spread this information. We bring more and more people into the, or at least out of the, two-party paradigm camps and stuff, and maybe get people thinking a little differently the more they find out how badly this monopoly has become over here with this, Republican-Democratic two-party system. Quick shout-out for Ponder and XL, who created the music for our show. I mean, part of the reason I love doing the show so much is because I get to hear the intro music before I start talking. I mean, it's so awesome music, some local artists here in San Diego that hooked us up for free. So I want to get their name out there. You can download that song and the album over on SoundCloud. Just look up Ponder and XL on SoundCloud and you'll find it. It's free. You can donate to them if you like it, whatever. Anyway, we're going to have a panel tonight. I'm going to be joined by the awesome Claire Bernish. What's up, Claire?
Not much. What's going on?
Oh, hanging in there. You had some really good articles that came out today from us and various other outlets, and you do so much work. I really don't know how you do it.
I don't sleep much.
Yeah, well, I'm there with you. I got 12 hours under my belt so far today, and looks like it'll be another few more after the radio show too. I mean, this is definitely not a part-time job. Exposed
no.
This monster of an empire that we got here that we're living under. I mean, we are the Neo-Roman citizens, and it's a full-time job just to understand what the hell is actually going on with this, because, many people have regular jobs, are super busy, have kids, have a bunch of things going on. I mean, it's hard for them to go sit there like we do for hours on end and dig into this stuff, and that's exactly why we do it, so that people that are busy doing other things can, we can break down this information, and, then it's like understandable and people can know what's going on, and that's
why to me it doesn't really feel like work. You know, it's something that I feel is such a good thing, something that we need to be doing. And Claire, I know you feel the same way.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This is something that I'm passionate about because I was an activist before I ever started writing. So this is a natural extension of that.
Yeah, and you know, to this day, none of us have been paid for this radio show. I mean, we're doing this as kind of a volunteer basis, you know, and so I find a lot of joy in it. It's really relaxing to me. It helps me, like, de-stress from all this crazy shit going on to be able to, like, vocalize it and talk about it. And then hopefully, like, people that listen to the show can kind of, you know, listen to what we're saying, and then you'll be able to communicate this information to your friends and family. And really, that's the only positive, like, one of the most positive things we could do right now is just spread this information and so that people have it and they know what's going on. You may not be able to, we may not be able to fix this election or this country or this world, this election cycle by voting. But I think that the more powerful issue at point is, you know, spreading this information out there so that people are more informed, so that in the future we can make better decisions than maybe our parents did or our grandparents or, you know, whatever, whoever got us into this mess. I mean, I guess we're responsible for it too, and people being apathetic and all that. But, you know, information is the key, and that's why, people, if you look, I don't want to be too specific. One of my family members is in China right now on a school trip, and I literally can't even get in contact with the guy because the internet censorship in China is so bad that he can't even get on Facebook and message me or you know, I just don't know. Or maybe he's just purposely dodging me. Maybe that's the case. But no, seriously, it's really hard to get through because in China, man, they've really locked down on this internet stuff because they're afraid of people learning information and using it to undermine the oppressive government they have over there. In the United States, I think they've not taken that heavy-handed of an approach, but they've gone an alternate direction where it's like, hey, let's just distract the hell out of everybody with reality TV and with all this other crap and all this divide-and-conquer mentality that they kind of – they're neutralized anyway. We don't even have to censor them. We can just neutralize them, you know. And see, in China, it's different because China goes for this really like, oh, unification kind of – we're all the same ideology, and China like kind of pushes their you know, the Communist Party as the unifying thing that like brings everyone together for this like common, like it's almost like a you know, a national identity basically is what they've created over there. And in the US it's quite the opposite. It's like we don't have to be authoritarian as much when it comes to locking down information when we can all we have to do, since we already have all the biggest military in the world, we can kind of just divide and conquer all the people, and then they fight amongst each other, and they let us basically get away with whatever the hell we want to do. And that's exactly what's going on. So, you know, it's important that we have this information and these technologies available to transmit this information, whether it's listening to this radio show or talking to your friends on Skype or on Facebook or on some encrypted chat or whatever. I mean, right now, since we have this freedom of information, we got to use it for good things. If we don't, I mean, we're gonna continue to make the same mistakes that our forefathers made, and allow our living situation to turn into something that oppresses people around the world.
We don't want to end up with the Sesame Credit thing like they have in China. You know, it's like this almost ingeniously dystopic form of self censorship. You know. We don't want to end up with anything like that.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of self-censorship already going on, you know, and with all this kind of not as like upfront spying like the NSA and, you know, the Patriot Act and mass surveillance and all that crap. They're not like directly like in your face, hey, dude, we're like spying on you, but they're doing it in a way that like kind of makes people self-censor. You know, you wouldn't say the things that you maybe would have said had it not been for this huge surveillance dragnet that they got going on right now, you know. And so that being said, let me introduce our panel. We've got my longtime co-host, DB Schwartz, on the call. What's up, DB?
Hey, not much, Nick. This is a pretty interesting topic going on tonight because, alas, I can't get into my bank account now and my Facebook's getting messed with. So you know how it starts.
Well, they got you under surveillance, bro. No, I'm just
kidding. I've been knowing that already.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we all are, but let's not let that get in the way of spreading the information. You know what I mean? Because that's what they want. That's what they want. They want this surveillance to have us self-censoring ourselves so that they don't got to do what China does. They just let us do it ourselves, and our own neighbors will censor us and call, and you know, report us for radical free speech and stuff like that. You know, that's already going on with me personally on Facebook, man. Like on our page, you know, we've got like 1.6 million followers, and a lot of our stuff gets a lot of views. But there's a lot of people out there where it, you know, it's something that they disagree with or something that they think is not good or whatever, they end up censoring us, man. Like I barely got my profile back, my main profile, which is the one I used for adminning on like hundreds of pages. It was banned for like 2 months in a row. It went 1 month and then I had a week and then it got banned again for a whole nother month. And I mean, so like this censorship stuff is going on. It's not the cops coming around saying, oh, I don't like that post, you take that post down or we're gonna throw you in jail. It's these assholes on social media saying, oh, this hurts my feelings, so I'm just going to, you know, get this person banned because it hurts my feelings. It's like,
and the censorship, and those are trolls, too.
What's that?
Those are trolls. I mean,
yeah,
those are just paid fake personalities.
Sometimes they are, but, you know, even worse is when it's just it really literally is regular people that are just so offended by everything now that it's like, oh, well, I'm just going to get this person banned because I disagree with this post. And then, you know, on the other hand, as you were saying, DB, I mean, now you got these paid shills out there, dude, and Hillary Clinton, the super PAC that's aligned with Hillary Clinton. We covered this over on the anti-media. I actually wrote the article on it. I'm going to pull it up just for technicalities purposes because I can't remember the damn name of this super PAC. I think it was called Correct the Record or something. Yeah, yeah. There's a super PAC that's aligned with Hillary Clinton. And also, this is a very interesting super PAC, too, because apparently, because of some technicality, they're allowed to coordinate with the Hillary Clinton campaign directly, which is you know, regular super PACs can't do that. If they did that,
is their office in Delaware?
Maybe they have the same address as Clinton and Trump over there. But anyway, there's a super PAC called Correct the Record. And like I said, they're coordinating directly with the Hillary Clinton campaign, which is very, very borderline illegal. But I guess, you know, they're exploiting some kind of loophole in the law that they're able to do it. It may not be ethical, but, you know, it's legal. they've got this effort called Breaking Barriers 2016. And according to their website, I have a quote here. While Hillary Clinton fights to break down barriers and bring America together, the Barrier Breakers 2016 Digital Task Force will serve as a resource for supporters looking for positive content and pushback to share with their online progressive communities, as well as thanking prominent supporters and committed superdelegates on social media. Correct the Record will invest more than $1 million into Barrier Breakers 2016 activities, including the more than tripling of its digital operation to engage in online messaging both for Secretary Clinton and to push back against attackers on social media platforms like Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, and Instagram.
and, so cue the puke sounds.
Yeah, exactly. And
I don't know how you kept a straight face while reading that.
I know, seriously, right? And these aren't some like half-ass trolls that are some 16-year-old kids that are trying to find minimum wage jobs for the summer. We're talking about people that include reporters, bloggers, public affairs specialists, you know, PR, you know, basically propagandists, designers, Ready for Hillary alumni, which I guess I don't know exactly what they mean by that, but people that used to work for the Hillary Clinton, directly for the Hillary Clinton presidential campaign, and Hillary Clinton super fans who have led groups similar to those with which the task force will organize. Sorry, God, I lost it there at the end. Anyway, you get the point. I mean, Hillary Clinton has a $1 million, and that's just what they, you know, that's what they're going to be spending in the short term. You know, who knows how much it's going to ramp up to be by the time the general election comes around.
I heard it was like something like $5 million was some kind of check was cut from one super PAC to a bunch of the others, and they split it up, and they all started buying into social media.
I wouldn't doubt that, man, because this is where the battleground is being waged right now, right? This is where the undecided vote is waged on social media, because the people that aren't on social media, you're talking about the folks that are kind of like the 60 plus people, which you know, coincidentally vote at like the highest rate out of any other age group, but they've already got their minds made up for the most part. They're going to support, you know, those people will support basically whoever the political establishment tells them to vote for, you know, whether it's Kasich or Cruz or Hillary Clinton. I mean, that 60 plus vote is kind of very reliable in the fact that it'll vote for whoever the hell the candidate is, it winds up being, even if it's chosen during a rigged process. I don't think it really matters to them because they're not highly informed like the younger people are that are really getting out there and supporting people other than Hillary Clinton and other than the Republican establishment, you know. And so it does not surprise me that these people are spending millions of dollars to target social media, but I am kind of surprised that they're telegraphing this message out there. I mean, this is something that if I was running one of these super PACs, I would keep it a secret if I was
in. They're not very savvy, Nick. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, if I was running this campaign, I would not be telling anybody about it. You know what I mean? Because that's pretty embarrassing that you got to hire people to go on social media and like do your bidding for you. That's like the purity of social media is that it's organic. It's like people making, you know, people out there having discussions and stuff. You're tainting it with these trolls. And today on Claire's article that we're going to talk about next, I noticed a comment that was like pro Hillary, and the first thing that came to my head is like, oh dude, this is probably one of her trolls, you know what I mean? And they're kind of like making up, they're trying to make excuses for the fact that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump both share a business address in Delaware, which is notoriously used to dodge taxes. So first, let's talk about this story while we're on this election stuff. But before we do, I think we have Manny Aguilar on the line. I want to introduce Manny. What's up, Manny?
Hey, what's up, Nick? Never fear, Manny's here. You know, yeah, you guys are talking about, you know, how busy you are and what's happening to you guys. Well, a lot of luck to you guys, Claire and you and, you know, and DB, but you're talking to the choir here, you know? So, I mean, what can I say, you know? But it's been very busy. May 1st is going to be a big day. A lot of things happening around the world. But the one, without being biased, the one that everybody better be looking at is the one that's going to bring in 1 million people confirmed already to 1.5 million at El Zócalo to ask for the president, Peña Nieto, to resign. That's going to be heavy duty. And I know it's going to be heavy duty because, you know, I took a hit by, like, Mexican cops. Those motherfuckers, man, they hit hard, you know. But they didn't want us at Costco and Tijuana to boycott Drisco, you know. So basically all the groups are now decided that they need to unionize to get big numbers and stuff like that. So that's a good thing. We're having everybody unionized and stuff like that. So as a last count, officially count, unofficially count, 1.5 million. Officially, 1.2 million. I mean, shit, even 1 million. That's, sure, you can't get 1 million people here in the United States. I like to see 100,000 people walking down, you know, downtown Chula Vista. You know, I mean, seriously, you know, I mean.
Yeah, man. I can't remember the last time 100,000 people got together in the United States if it wasn't for like a sports event or something like that. I mean, it really doesn't happen anymore.
No, it doesn't, Nick, and stuff like that, you know. But all those things are still happening, Nick. You know, a lot of things are just basically, I'm gonna get arrested in Riverside County, you know, because this cop, you know, I called him a coward because he waited for me to turn around before he pushed me from behind. He didn't have the guts to push me from the front. You know, he pushed me from the back and stuff like that. You know, but the good thing that the sergeant was there and he happened to know me, so I'll see, damn, why is Manny Aguilar down here from LA? Damn, dude, I'm everywhere. So don't be surprised because you're seeing me right here in Temecula, you know. And so we're going after him again May 1st downtown LA. If you would like to join us, and we're also going to be occupying, just for your FYI, we're going to be occupying City Hall for a week starting on Sunday also. And, of course, you know who's going to be there. PM Beers is in the house and stuff like that, you know. So there's a lot of things happening. And just, you know, that thing about trying to get the president out of Mexico, people said it's never been done. It has been done. It was done in Guatemala, and I think we can do it in Mexico because Mexico is a leading country in Latin America and stuff like that, you know. So everywhere I go, people say, well, they know Manny's here. Well, shit, dude, I can be spotted right away, you know. Now, the only person that can blend anywhere is our MAGA brother over there, DB Shorts. You know, he looks like a MAGA, so he'll blame anyone. You know?
So hey, I'm the enemy from within, Manny.
I hear you, brother. So lots of love to you, DB. Lots of love to you, Claire. Lots of love to you, Nick, and stuff like that. And, you know, keep on talking and having a good show. Love you guys, okay? And I'm here.
Thank you, Manny, our resident hardworking activist out there on the streets every week, man. So much appreciated what you do. And, yeah, dude, you know, again, it kind of goes back to what I was talking about at the beginning of the show, because Mexico has a different philosophy on clamping down on its citizenry than the United States. And you see the difference there. As you said, on May 1st, they're expecting well over 1 million people to march down in Mexico to call for the resignation of the president. In the U.S., I mean, you can't get, you know, they have this democracy spring going on, and I hate to, you know, make it seem small, but it's, I don't think there was more than like 10,000 people down there, you know, it just, the numbers aren't there, and it just kind of goes to show the difference in philosophy and the way the governments try to deal with the things going on. In Mexico, they assassinate large crowds, 43 students just disappear. You know, they brutalize the hell out of people on a huge scale. I mean, in the U.S., yeah, we have police brutality and stuff, but it's different. It's different when one guy gets shot by a cop to where 20 people get shot, and, you know, things like that going on. And the corruption in Mexico is so open, and people know what's going on. So the numbers are able to get mobilized. In the U.S., I mean, like I said, people are so distracted with stuff and you know, caught up doing other things that just it's so hard to get those kind of numbers. I mean, the Million Man March, I'm afraid to say, may never happen again in the United States, at least from the current outlook of things. Yeah, so we got this story here on Trump and Hillary, and Claire wrote it, and it's going pretty viral out there on social media, because this is just another big time example of Hillary Clinton's hypocrisy with Trump. I mean, we all know he's a billionaire. We all know he's a businessman. We're not surprised if he's using tax havens and stuff. But Hillary Clinton, I mean, she's like this pseudo-populist that's like, we got to tax people more and we got to hold them accountable. And she even had some statements to say about the Panama Papers, even though she was loosely tied into it. But Claire, tell us a little bit about this Delaware address that is now becoming kind of a sensation on social media.
Okay, so there's this, like, one residence in Delaware that's on North Orange Street, and it's a small, like, two-story building. It's just basically an office building or residence or something, and it's used as a tax haven by over 285,000 companies. And it's Delaware has some extremely favorable tax laws for corporations and companies, so it makes sense that a lot of businesses are drawn to the state. Now, technically speaking, what they're doing is perfectly legal, and, you know, I have plenty of problems with taxes on my own, but what the problem is here is that, you know, Clinton kind of moralizes and takes this kind of moral high horse about everybody needs to be paying taxes and everybody needs to do their part and let's have tax transparency and all this stuff, and here she is, you know, forget Panama, she's in Panama Papers too, but here she is using basically a tax haven in Delaware, in the U.S., and still managing to tell everybody else to pay taxes. And then a spokesperson for her actually managed to say that she had not benefited at all by using this address, which it's kind of like, well, why are you using that address in Delaware then?
Why not,
you know,
in her quote-unquote home state of New York, right?
Right. I mean, this is like, it's, I think, 20-some miles outside of Washington, D.C., and there are all these big name people kind of hiding out in Delaware in this house, or at least they're in name only. But still, it's so hypocritical. But it's also so typical of, you know, how everything else that she does. She does this all the time. She is so hypocritical about everything. I mean, she lies with an alarming frequency, and this is just one more example of that.
So this company that she has out there, it's called ZFS Holdings LLC, which I have no clue why it's called that or anything like that. But basically, according to one of her spokesmen, it was set up to manage, quote unquote, manage her book and speaking income. So more or less, like, she's using it to launder her speaking income from speaking at Goldman Sachs and shit, so that she doesn't get taxed on it. More or less, right?
Right. I mean, the thing I have to reiterate here. It's not that I feel like she needs to be paying taxes. Everybody needs to pay their taxes, because that is not my stance. But what the problem is here is that she's telling everybody else that, and yet here she is using a tax haven herself. It's like beyond the pale.
Yeah, and you know, she I covered early late last year. Sorry, earlier on in the campaign. Where Hillary Clinton said she was ready to, if she was elected, she was going to topple the 1%. And also you have here in a statement to one of these unions when she was speaking in Pennsylvania, she said, quote, "Some of you may have just heard about these disclosures about outrageous tax havens," and I think she was referencing the Panama Papers, "and loopholes, and super rich people across the world are exploiting in Panama and elsewhere. We are going after all these scams and make sure everyone pays their fair share here in America." It's like, yeah, but except for you, right? You don't have to do it. Or is she just like, you know, maybe since the laws are on the books, I guess she can excuse it being, you know, saying, well, the laws are there, so I'm just abiding by the law, but we should change the law, and then I'll abide by it, you know, and pay higher taxes.
But, you know, but even then, like, her spokesperson is saying that she's not benefiting from it. I mean, even if she were to be honest enough and say, like, well, yeah, I'm using it, it's legal, and I'm benefiting from it, that might even be something. But she's even lying there.
Yeah, and or maybe if it's like, okay, well, I'm going to do this, I'm going to not pay taxes, but you know, what I would have paid in taxes, I'm going to give away to charity or something like that to help people. It's like, okay, well, maybe that would be cool too, but... I mean, she's got this Clinton Initiative thing that has become kind of just this big global corporate slush fund. I don't know how to explain it, but it's really not charity. I mean, it doesn't really do any charitable work.
No.
One of the scariest things they've done is they've basically lobbied Haiti's national sovereignty out of existence. I mean, the Clinton Foundation now is controlling everything in and out of that place that needed to be fully rebuilt after that horrible earthquake, and they're not being, they're being basically, you know, stolen from, and there's huge riots and protests going on down there right now.
And how many times have we got to go over there and meddle in Haiti's internal affairs, man? It's so awful. I mean, we've tried to overthrow that country so many times, and oh man.
Well, we have now. I mean, their economy is completely tied to private interests, and I mean, like, foundations are controlling it.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And so we've got so much dirt on Hillary right now, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that, just because I literally – the sight of her makes me sick.
I always find it really fascinating when I run across an actual Clinton supporter. Like, it doesn't – mostly it seems like they're her paid troll army, but every now and then it's a friend I'm familiar with who supports her, and I am just kind of dumbfounded.
Well, you got to make sure it's a person in real life, because, you know, one of her paid shills, you never know. So we talked about the troll army. I mean, that's one thing. Claire, you also covered some of this electoral fraud, which is another huge, huge issue. I mean, oh, man, so many instances here. And especially, I mean, the big one to me, the biggest one is Iowa, because Iowa seems to be where they always have this meddling going on and stuff. The media really, really focuses in on Iowa, and then there's always like a weird, like, If the right person wins it, then it's like, oh, it's huge for them. And if the wrong person wins it, then, you know, then it's like no big deal and stuff. But there was a lot of meddling going on in Iowa and then throughout the entire election. And that's why people this year are starting to realize, people are starting to say, damn, our elections are rigged.
It's laid bare, finally. I mean, finally all the information is out there. It's plain to see. You don't have to do much digging any longer to see how rigged the system is. I mean, in the past, you might have had to do some convincing of people, but now it's just so obvious. It's in plain sight.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, The reason Iowa to me is like the big deal is because there's just so much attention given over to it. And to me, it seemed like there was a lot of effort put in this year to make sure Hillary Clinton won. And by effort, I mean meddling or, dare we say, rigging of the election over there. Claire, can you give us a quick rundown of what went on in Iowa and then maybe any other like kind of standout states that kind of really brought this reality home?
Well, in Iowa, she ended up winning delegates in certain areas by a coin toss, which, okay, that's fine. That's the rules in that state. But at the same time, there were questions about, you know, voter suppression in varying ways. And the state's Democratic Party called it the closest Democratic caucus in Iowa history. And even with all the questions that arose, the Democratic Party refused to audit the election. They refused to examine it or investigate or see if there was anything done wrong. They just said, nope, sorry, you know, she won, that's it. And, you know, who knows if that's true? She might not have won. She probably did not win, actually, from the information that I saw when I was actually investigating this article. But there it is. I mean, that started the ball rolling. And then it seems in virtually every state after that, in primaries and caucuses, there has been some sort of question or some sort of voter suppression and disenfranchisement that is so blatant, it's kind of hard to deny. Like Nevada, there was this where they had a sign-in sheet for the vote there, and it had a Hillary logo at the top of the page. And this is supposed to be a neutral election. You're not allowed to do any electioneering at all, and there's her logo right on the sign-in sheet, which I'm not even sure how there weren't charges filed about that.
She's been bankrolling the DNC through her PAC. A lot of people don't know that, and that her PAC is now broke.
Well, there's like a joint what was it that I just saw it last week. There's like this joint super PAC thing where the party is able to – the DNC and Hillary Clinton have almost morphed into one big entity. In many ways, where they've got this unlimited fundraising ability, and I think that was the one what's his name was bankrolling George Clooney. That's the one George Clooney was bankrolling with his recent when he did that big fundraiser. It was like 300-something thousand bucks a couple to sit at the table with Clinton and Clooney. And that went to this DNC slush fund, which is also being used to promote Hillary Clinton. Any doubts of the Democratic Party being like an unbiased institution, just kind of, you know, overlooking the elections, making sure they're fair. I mean, that idea went out the window a long time ago. I think most people kind of know or understand that like the DNC is really trying to get Hillary Clinton elected, and they're pushing Bernie Sanders to the wayside, or even going as far to like commit fraud or at least really, really bend the rules to kind of not let him win. And the other thing to keep in mind here is that these parties aren't, in many, many ways, these political parties, the Republicans and Democrats, are not governed by federal electoral law, because these parties are more or less like almost like private corporations. And they have their own sets of like bylaws that they create and that they follow, you know. And it's like in a company, if you break the company rules, well, then that's up to the company to say, okay, well, are we going to discipline this person or are we not going to discipline this person? It's not like if someone in your company breaks the company rules, you don't call the cops and say, hey, this guy, you know, he didn't call in sick. He just didn't show up. Come and arrest him. That's not how corporations work. You know, and so when rules get broken in these parties, it's many times not an issue that can be really, you know, fought with the laws and stuff. The laws are kind of don't apply there in many ways. I'm not saying all of these situations, but in many ways. And that should just be more of a reason for people to say, you know what, it's time to stop putting so much stock into these damn political parties, because they're doing whatever the hell they want. And in the end, as we found out in another example that you covered here, Claire, when it comes to the Colorado Republican Party, I mean, they literally aren't afraid to let people know that, hey, you know what? Your voice doesn't even count in these primary or in these caucuses. I mean, we're literally just going to choose the people for you. What can you tell us about Colorado GOP?
Yeah, Colorado actually chose back in, I believe it was August. Yeah, the GOP leaders decided that they would cancel the whole straw poll, which basically nullifies, cancels the popular vote altogether. They didn't want to. They said that they didn't want to bind their delegate to a candidate who might drop out of the race, but that seems highly unlikely. It's much more likely that they didn't want anti-establishment candidate Trump to gain the popular vote in any state where possible, because as they tweeted and then deleted, "We did it, never Trump." I mean, obviously, and that was from the GOP Colorado party. I mean, you can't get any more blatant than that. These parties are establishment parties. They do not want these somewhat subversive candidates in office. And it seems that they will do whatever is necessary to make that happen. And I mean, as far as like even Bernie goes, even when he wins in certain states, the press kind of jumps on board, a lot of them who donate to Hillary's campaign, and just play, they kind of downplay his victories. So it's like an all-together effort to get these establishment candidates in office when the people apparently seem to be screaming, "We don't want these establishment candidates."
Yeah, and the thing to me that is really, really shows the true role of the press, and I covered this in my article about the 2016 being the year that people realized the elections were rigged, it's really the hypocrisy in the mainstream media that you see when it comes to the two different candidates here, or the several different candidates. When you know, when Cruz beats Trump, even if it's like a tiny state, it's like, oh my God, Trump's in real trouble. He could lose. You know, this could be the end of this could be the end of his campaign. And then, you know, Bernie Sanders wins 8 out of 9 of the last contests before New York, and every time he wins, it's like, oh, doesn't change anything. Oh, doesn't change anything. Oh, Hillary's still going to be the nominee. Doesn't matter. You know, and so there's a huge discrepancy between the two different parties and the way they're covering, and it goes to show, you know, how the media really goes about protecting the mainstream candidates. And now the other thing that I wanted to bring up, so we got the vote rigging, we've got the fraudulent tactics by the parties, you got the you know, the media coverage and stuff like that, but you know, I mean, it just kind of goes to show that people need to start embracing a new way of thinking here. It's not these two parties. It's not these voting for the lesser of two evils that's going to make anything change. In fact, I think people abstaining from these voting for these two parties would send a much bigger message, because it kind of just goes to show that there, even if one of these candidates won, I mean, there would be very major actions taken to kind of subvert that candidate.
Once they get in office, the Congress is probably going to do its best. If it's an anti-establishment candidate in office, the Congress, or you know, whomever, is going to do their best to make sure that whatever policies that person wants to employ will go down. I mean, it's not going to stop with just this election.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, and it's time to embrace a new way of thinking. You know what I mean? It's not, it's just, I don't know. It's, to me, it's such a waste. And Claire, we kind of went over this concept a couple days ago about the phenomena of, you know, the people that actually are voting for Bernie Sanders and the people that are voting for Trump that actually, you know, actually give a shit, right? There's a bunch of people out there that actually care, and the reason they're supporting these candidates is because it's the best way they know to do something about this situation that they found themselves in that they don't like, right? I think the reason why Trump and Sanders garner so much grassroots support is because people understand at least part of the problem here, that there's something not right about the system and about what's going on. So they genuinely are concerned, and they think they're doing, you know, the righteous thing to do, which is go vote for these people. But we can't forget that this is the same type of movement that happened under Obama, man. All these people that supported Obama back in 2008, I mean, it was a very similar movement to what is now surging up behind Sanders and, to a lesser extent, Trump. But, you know, look what happened after Obama got elected. I mean, nothing changed, really.
Well, theoretically, though, Sanders and Trump neither are beholden to corporate interests. So, I mean, Trump played the game and won, supposedly, whatever you want to think of him. and Bernie's getting by on small donations. So I don't think you can kind of hold over either of their heads what most other candidates have. Now, that doesn't mean they can't just be taken out. I mean, that's the biggest fear people have. And then the most realistic thing really is like a breaking up of both parties, because the establishment's not going to allow either guy to run, and they're the popular favorite. So imagine four parties going forward. I mean, the divide and conquer works, but if they're all super organized and they all push through agendas that go against, you know, basically the 1% of the 1% that are controlling everything, and we start taking back the economy little by little, however we have to do it, then it's all worth it.
I mean, interesting point. Claire, what do you think about this?
I really wish people would take this energy that they're putting into these candidates and think outside the box a little more, outside the whole statist rule, outside the governmental paradigm, and realize that this corrupted system, even if it does kind of fall apart a little bit this year after the election, is not going to change itself. We can't do much to change it at all. The best way to do anything is really to subvert the system and kind of start working outside of it on our own. I really firmly believe that.
The only problem with that is, like, how do you create communities that are completely self-sufficient without getting Waco'd? You know what I mean? That's where we're at in this country. I totally agree with you, but I don't see it happening in a country like this or China or Russia or really even like Brazil. If there's some country with a lot of money for the government and a strong central government, you can never pull that off. They'll just take you out because you're a threat to the status quo.
I don't think it has to be total, though. I don't think that you have to totally withdraw. If we don't have a choice, you're right, because they could be another Waco-type situation if somebody made a community like that. But if you kind of withdraw as much as possible, like withdraw your money, like boycott the corporations and withdraw your money from, you know, as much as possible wherever you can, and have a community of living where everybody is kind of in the cooperative sort of philosophy, I just see that being much more effective. And you know, it won't necessarily bring down the whole system, but it will, I think, implement some very, very positive and necessary changes.
As long as we can just subjugate the war machine's funding, the world will right itself.
It's a very interesting topic, and to me it goes back again to 2008. And DB, you brought up a good point, because Obama was Obama's biggest funder back in 2008 was actually Goldman Sachs. So to think that Obama was this kind of, you know, think about his rhetoric and how he was going to take on Wall Street and stuff. And then when he got into power, he kind of just carried on with the bailout that Bush had kind of set up and all that stuff. So he didn't really do anything on that front that he said he was going to do. It is interesting that Sanders and Trump are not beholden to that same interest. However, the bigger concern to me is the people that were supporting Obama and like that kind of grassroots swell that he created. And I know a bunch of people, a bunch of my friends. In fact, DB, I think, didn't you say you voted for him in 2008 as well?
A lot
of people really put stock into that movement and stuff. But the problem was, and here's the problem I see with both Trump and Sanders here, is that after the people rose up to kind of elect a guy that they thought was going to do their bidding, and then he didn't follow through on all the stuff he said. Well, where were those people? They weren't there to hold the fire to his feet. You know what I'm saying? And that's the problem I see here with these other candidates, is that a lot of people, I think, will just be disappointed if they get elected. But then all that movement that they generated kind of just dissipates and it goes away. You know,
it depends, though, because there's a youth movement going on, too, though. They have a lot of energy, man. They're going to all these rallies like they're rock concerts or like they're Super Bowls. This is the new entertainment.
That's true, but that's also still similar to Obama. You know what I mean? I mean, he inspired the youth. He drew a crowd of like 300,000 in Berlin, I think it was, of mostly young people and stuff. And so, you know, I don't want to say Sanders is just like Obama, but I think the movements, I hate to say this, but man, I think that Sanders' movement would be stronger if he gets screwed.
Well, yeah, he needs to go with Jill Stein or whatever and run under the green or start an entirely new party. I mean,
I agree with you on that, man. Yeah. I think this is a good chance here with the huge following, loyal followings that both of these candidates have kind of extracted. This could be a chance to break up these two parties, man, and that would be a good move forward. I mean, we need more voices out there. We need real debates to go on. I mean, in that aspect, European ways of government are much better than the U.S. because they don't necessarily have this two-party kind of duopoly over the political system. Australia actually just elected a president, which is on the far right. I guess he's like the Trump of Australia. Australia just elected someone outside of the two-party system. This is the first time it's happened since 1951. You know, so this movement is not isolated to America. I mean, I think a lot of challenges to the status quo are spreading throughout the world. So we're going to have to just wait and see how all this plays out. And we're going to be providing our coverage of it from the anti-media. I want to move on here.
Hey, Nick, I just wanted to say that Carter did make a good point, though. The problem is that we can't get the numbers in this country because everybody's got their priorities all screwed up. They're either medicated or they're so involved in, just like my friend called me 2 days ago. She says, oh, Manny, I've been crying all day and I'm depressed because Prince died. I'm sorry. I love Prince, but you know what? Damn, you should be crying for the people that have died in Ecuador. You know, where's the coverage for Ecuador and stuff like that? We're covering all this bullshit. It's not even funny anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. And that's exactly what I was going to talk about next here, because we got this 28-page report, which is really going to – I mean, I don't know. The people that have talked about it have said that it points to Saudi Arabia. And, you know, we all know that Saudi Arabia is doing some really awful things with the executions, the beheadings of their activists. I mean, you can't even write a damn poem in Saudi Arabia without getting lashed for it if it doesn't line up with the ideology of the government. These are our allies. And you got this 28-page 9/11 report that's going to be heading to Obama pretty soon here. And we covered today on the anti-media that James Clapper, which, you know, I have zero respect for the guy, but he said that that they may declassify the pages. And what we're probably going to find out is that Saudi Arabia was behind a lot of these, you know, terrorism attacks, including 9/11.
Well, there were four countries involved. It was, you know, it's going to point to the UK and to Israel as well, but it's not the countries. It's there's rogue elements within all three and then ourselves. So you're going to find that there's going to be mass arrests starting here soon, unless there's like some kind of civil infighting and it goes the wrong way for us, the people. But hopefully that doesn't happen.
Oh, hold on. I'm having a little trouble pulling this video up. Let me see. Where'd it go?
I thought you were getting a drink of beer for a second
there. I know. There's a long gap of silence there. Did I ruffle some feathers or what?
That too. But no, I'm trying to dig up this video, but now I could have sworn I had it archived right here, but now I'm having trouble finding it. Okay, here we go. All right. Now I got the video. Here we go.
28 redacted pages of the 9/11 Commission report that the world is waiting for with bated breath. And unfortunately, they've gotten really good at redaction nowadays. You can't just like hold it up to the light and be like, I see like a Q. I see a Q and an E. It doesn't work anymore. Well, luckily, Senator Bob Graham was on the 9/11 Commission, and he said that the chapter reveals the 9/11 hijackers received substantial support from elements of the Saudi society, including the government and wealthy charities. So the U.S. government is hiding communication between terrorists and Saudi Arabia. Imagine if you or I hid communications with terrorists. We would be in a f***ing naked pyramid in Gitmo with a car battery strapped to our nuts immediately. Like, immediately, before you even knew what happened, just black hood over it. Oh, man! I'm in the naked pyramid. God damn it! Am I on the bottom? Why is he going to be on the top? Immediately. Also this week, Saudi Arabia threatened economic reprisals if Congress passed a bill allowing victims of 9/11 to sue Saudi Arabia for its role in the attacks. Obama has pressured Congress to block the bill, and John Kerry said the legislation could expose the U.S. to lawsuits and take away our sovereign immunity and create a terrible precedent. All right, the precedent of allowing victims to sue foreign governments for their role in various attacks. I mean, that could open us up, open the possibility that we could be sued for, like, the Korean War, you know, or the Vietnam War, you know, or overthrowing the Shah of Iran in 1953. You know, or the Bay of Pigs, right? Or the 1963 coup in Indonesia. You know, it could open us up to the bombing of Cambodia in 1969 to 75, bombing in Laos to 71 to 73, the Chilean coup in 1973, Angola various years, really. So it could open us up to the Contra invasions in Nicaragua that we supported in the 80s. You know, Libya in 1986, Bolivia also 1986, Iran again 1987. So I'm just saying it could be a terrible Libya again 1989, Panama, you know, or Iraq, the Iraq War in 1990, Somalia, various stuff we were involved in the 90s, Yugoslavia, Haiti, 1994. So anyway, it's a bad idea. It's a bad bombing Sudan in 1998, Afghanistan in 98, Afghanistan again in 2001, Afghanistan 2001 until forever, I guess, forever. You know, Yemen 2002 until question mark. Iraq War, the sequel, The Empire Strikes Back, right? Colombia, all kinds of shit we did down there. But in our defense, we were coked out of our minds. So anyway, it is a bad idea. Haiti, 2004. You know, we just swooped in, grabbed their president, got the fuck out of there, right? Venezuela, Pakistan, 2005 to whenever. Somalia, 2006 to, it's going to be a while. Syria, you break it, you bought it. Am I right? Iraq War number 3, Rise of the Machines. You know, I left about 50 off the list because this is only a half hour show, but
you get the point. I mean, so the main sticking point to me here, and Claire, I think this is kind of our focal point, right, for this article you're working on tomorrow, is that their argument against, like, you know, letting us pass this 9/11 bill, because not only is it connected to showing us the pages of this 28-page report, which is, you know, undoubtedly will show ties to Saudi Arabia, it's also going to allow the victims of 9/11 to sue any governments that they find responsible for these attacks, which, again, would probably be Saudi Arabia. And these politicians, and not only John Kerry, but Obama has also reiterated this, and he said, you know, I don't know about allowing this lawsuit to go forward because, you know, then it opens us up to being sued for stuff we've done. But without elaborating, and here Lee Camp of Redacted Tonight elaborated a little bit more in somewhat of a funny way about all these awful, awful military interventions the United States has undertaken throughout the world, and specifically here in the Western Hemisphere, whether in Haiti or throughout the entire continent of South America, we pretty much toppled governments down there over and over repeatedly. They're worried that we could be sued for the stuff we do overseas, right? And this, to me, is like, that's like the worst excuse ever.
Yeah, this would be like divulging the empire's inner workings if they allowed to go through. I mean, they're using the excuse and Saudi Arabia and all that. It's just not. It's a cover your ass sort of maneuver.
Yeah, and so, you know, people are holding out hope that they may get access to these 28 pages, and you know, maybe if they do, It'll be an amended bill where it won't allow for people to sue, which is basically what I see happening, because Obama has already promised to veto this bill if it were to pass. So, I mean, maybe Obama, he'll veto this and say, okay, here's the 28 pages. Now, maybe a little bit coincidentally, the Saudi Arabian kingdom just announced today that it's going to begin diversifying away from oil. And so this is very big news. Anyone in the know knows that Saudi Arabia is pretty instrumental in the petrodollar process, the world monetary system. The world.
You can't make this shit up. I mean, I'm telling you, this is just, it's like you can watch the maneuvering back and forth with the U.S. and all these other countries, and it's kind of funny to watch.
You have to wonder if their reserves aren't quite as much as they thought, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Saudi Arabia announced today that by 2030 they want to be completely diversified away from oil, and at least the kingdom's plan is to become a investment powerhouse, which really leaves them exposed. Right now they've got this huge physical asset, you know, which is oil, you know, which the U.S. kind of has a deal with them to buy and to use that as like the global monetary system, the petrodollar and all that stuff. And that's what has driven a lot of our foreign policy since the 70s, is to keep the system in place and stuff. And, you know, I think that whether it's green tech or renewable energy, solar panel becoming more economically sound, a lot of different things, you know, global supply and demand for oil, fracking and all that stuff has led to a very, I guess you can call it a challenging situation for Saudi Arabia. And now they've gone into debt because the oil prices have fallen, and, you know, they're trying to cope with this changing atmosphere, and people now, thanks to, I don't know, the internet and other things, and I guess maybe our radio show and all, and the stuff that we do, people are becoming aware of this really nasty relationship with Saudi Arabia and the United States. And, you know, people are worried about the human rights abuses, you know, and people now care. They, people give a shit about gay people. And they know that Saudi Arabia is literally executing people for being gay and for doing, for being journalists and for being artists and things like that. And people are wondering, well, why in the hell do we have this relationship where we're selling these guys billions of dollars in arms every year? Like, this doesn't make any sense. I thought the U.S. spread democracy and freedom and love around the world. I didn't know we were supporting dictatorships and stuff like that. But now we're finding out this information, and now a relationship with Saudi Arabia is becoming pretty unpopular. And I'm not sure how much longer, you know, people are willing to stand by and allow this stuff to go on, but it seems like it's getting to that point. And if these 28 pages come unclassified, I mean, we're going to see a big change in the way Americans perceive Saudi Arabia and maybe other countries as well.
But we know what happens when countries move away from the petrodollar. The U.S. doesn't like that very much. Just saying.
That's true, but maybe the age of the petrodollar is come and gone. You know, I mean, it has only been around since like the 70s. It ran its course, and now that, you know, the oil price has fallen, countries are embracing clean energy on a very large scale. I mean, India just announced that it was able to undercut coal prices with its solar, and that's like a huge kind of you know, development in that sector. So maybe the age of fossil fuels is coming to an end, and now there's going to be a bunch of redistricting when it comes to all these alliances and stuff like that. And maybe now Saudi Arabia gets cut out of the equation. And maybe this isn't so coincidental when we look at this Iran peace deal and all that stuff. And, you know, the Saudis weren't very happy about that. So I don't know. We're experiencing a changing time when it comes to all these alliances, and they're going to be tested, and we're going to have to see how it comes out. But, you know, this is a very interesting time we're in. These elections, the economy, the petrodollar, our alliances, the empire, it's all coming under shaky ground. So we're going to see where the chips fall over the next couple of years. Thank you all for listening to the Anti-Media Radio Show. We're here 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, same place, same time here on UCY.TV. Thank you. Let them know, no, 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 no